to talk with Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye. From east of the Rockies, dial 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, 1-800-618-8255. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 702-727-1222. And you may call Art on the wildcard line at area code 702-727-1295. To reach Art from outside the U.S., first dial your access number to the USA, then 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM from the Kingdom of Nye with Art Bell.
That would be me. Coming up shortly is Dr. Lorraine Day, and she's got a story to tell that'll knock you right on your rear end. If you've got a computer, go up to my website and scroll down to the name Dr. Lorraine Day and take a look at the tumor this lady had. I've never in my life seen anything like it, ever. And she should be dead, but she's not, and she'll tell you why. And a whole lot more, and we'll cover some of this medical news breaking tonight on cancer and HIV. All right, can you imagine getting up in the morning to find your electricity, water, phone, TV, and radios don't work? Car might not start.
We just did that.
Thank you very much, but we just did that. See, I thought I made a mistake and again walked upon myself, but I really didn't. It was this rotten computer. I hope when Y2K comes, I hope it kills this computer first. before I kill it. All right, here from, I think, Thousand Palms, California, is Dr. Lorraine Day. Doctor?
Hello.
Well, welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you very much.
Boy, it's great to have you back, and you sound great.
Well, I am. I'm healthy as everything.
Go figure. All right. A lot of my audience will not know you, so if you would, take us back to the days at San Francisco.
All right. I'll just give you my credentials, because when I tell you the things I'm going to tell you, a lot of people will say, well, where did this woman come from? She can't really be a doctor. So I'll give you my credentials.
Please.
I am a medical doctor, an MD. I was on the faculty of the University of California, San Francisco Medical School for 15 years as associate professor and vice chairman of the Department of Orthopedic Surgery. I was also chief of orthopedic surgery at San Francisco General Hospital, where I was a trauma orthopedic surgeon taking care of all the gunshot wounds and the stabbings and the motor vehicle accidents and the gang wars and all of that for the 15 years I was there. So I have always been in the mainstream of academic medicine. I've never been on the fringes, and I am still licensed to practice medicine. And my life took a different turn when I developed cancer. And by that time, I'd seen thousands of patients die from the treatment we give them, actually, because all doctors know that chemotherapy and radiation destroy your immune system, which is the only system you have in your body that can get you well and keep you well from virtually any disease, including cancer. And both chemotherapy and radiation actually cause cancer. There are many articles in the literature about that. So I figured that I needed to rebuild my immune system rather than to destroy it with all of the medical treatments that are generally prescribed. And of course, my colleagues thought I was crazy, and they told me I was going to die, and they were wrong.
Let me take you back a little bit, if I might, and we'll sort of work forward. When you were working in emergency medicine, what was that like? I mean, all of us have probably one time or another been in an emergency room of a big hospital, and it's sort of sometimes controlled anarchy. It's the damnedest thing I've ever seen. It is sort of controlled anarchy, isn't it?
Well, actually, everybody knows what to do. I mean, we have done it for so long that everybody knows their place. Everybody knows exactly where they're to be positioned at the patient's side or head or wherever. And so before the patient hits the door, we all know our jobs. And so it may seem like it's pandemonium, but it's not. There is a lot of calling out because there's a lot of commotion going on and people are moving very rapidly. But everybody knows their job, and it's not a scary thing at all for people who do it all the time.
So something like that, the strain of that wouldn't kill you. In other words, working under that kind of life and death, hour after hour after hour, life and death situations, the stress of that does not... doesn't go to work on you, huh?
Well, actually, you know, I did it probably longer than any trauma surgeon maybe in the country. Most trauma surgeons only last about 5 years and they kind of burn out.
Right.
I did it really for, including my residency, I did it for 20 years and probably was the longest standing trauma surgeon around. But it did take its toll. I didn't realize it at the time because I loved my job and it was very exciting. But I lived on about 4 hours of sleep a night for about 20 years. And I would frequently operate as long as 22 hours on one patient. I operated continuously for 72 hours at a time on different patients without any sleep and with very little food.
Yeah, see, there you are. That's, in essence, what I was asking. In other words, that kind of life after a while, doesn't
destroys it... destroys your immune system.
That's where I was going. Doesn't it go to work on your immune system?
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. It destroys your immune system. I didn't realize it at the time. I thought I was made of iron and really did hold up for quite a long time. I didn't get cancer until I was about 55. I developed cancer when I was 55. It's amazing that I didn't develop it earlier because of the way I lived. But yes, it's you need to sleep at night. People need to at least get their 8 hours of sleep a day, and if they don't do that, their body's going to break down.
Well, I know that you also began to have concerns about your own immune system with regard to AIDS. This was in the early days of AIDS, and I think you and I did interviews going back, God, how long ago? When was the first interview you and I did?
Well, it must have been in the late 80s or early 90s.
That's right. Late 80s, I think.
Yeah.
And you had a confrontation, I guess, with the hospital over policies with regard to AIDS and blood that was all around and everything, and you finally decided for your own benefit you were going to toss it in.
Well, actually, I had operated on more AIDS patients than any surgeon in the country, and I'd been doing that without any particular protection other than what we usually wear in the operating room. I'd been doing that for 9 years of the epidemic. I had been talking to the Centers for Disease Control and the government and organized medicine saying, look, if drug addicts can get AIDS from a needle stick, well, certainly a healthcare worker could get AIDS from a needle stick.
Sure.
And they kept telling me, no, 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 it can't happen. And I said, you know, you people must be out of your mind. And, of course, they were not in the operating room, so they didn't really care what happened to the rest of us. But not only was I in the operating room every day, but I felt an obligation to, I had 12 residents and interns on my service at all times. I had 8 other doctors who were working for me, and then all the nurses in the operating room. I had an obligation for their safety. And so all the time the government kept telling me, no, 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 it can't happen. And then on October 2, 1987, the first nurse was found to be positive from a single needle stick, and it was at our hospital. And that's when I sort of decided that something needed to be done. And so I got the hospital to agree that I could test my patients with an informed signed consent. And they all agreed, and then suddenly it hit the newspapers a few days later that the headlines were uproar over San Francisco doctors' testing policy. And the very doctors who were my colleagues and my friends who had agreed, the other chiefs of the various services, had agreed that I could do this and it was within the rules of the hospital, they came out to the newspaper and said that they hadn't agreed and that I was doing this on my own and they were against it. And so that's the way the controversy started. And I couldn't figure out for a long time why they would do that. But After a number of years on the circuit and understanding politics, I did understand.
And you ran smack into the politics of AIDS, that great wall.
Right.
All right. Since then, a lot of water has gone under the bridge. A lot of people have died.
Yes.
Almost every week or 2 weeks, I see a new story about, well, this is, we've found a way to do this or that with AIDS, and we think we've got a vaccine, and then, of course, a little while later, they say, well, oops, we don't have a vaccine. We thought we did. Sorry, we don't. And various cures. There has been some progress in keeping AIDS patients alive longer with these protease inhibitors and this soup they give them. And tonight, even tonight, I've got another one. HIV killing proteins found in tears. Seems that tears and the urine of pregnant women, even saliva, tends to kill the AIDS virus in test tubes.
That's right. Anything that works in a test tube is really useless unless you have many, many more years of studies in animals and then human beings. I mean, it is ridiculous to make for the government or organized medicine or the pharmaceutical company that is doing this research to have a lot of hoopla surrounding this. What this does is it makes a big stampede for the stock market to invest in
money.
This particular company.
Sure, pharmaceutical company.
Yeah, but other than that, it has very little...
On the other hand, the other day, Doctor, I read a story that now 1 in 8 Africans are infected with HIV. That's 1 in 8.
Right.
So from the 80s, when you and I talked, to today, where have we come with AIDS and where are we going?
We have 33 million people around the world infected with AIDS, and we have 13 million deaths already. And there is no end in sight, and the government really has no intention of controlling AIDS, nor does the United Nations, nor anyone else.
Oh, well...
And I found that out the hard way. I have lots of documentation for that. For a long time, I thought that if they just were informed of what was happening, they would do something about it, but they do not. They're not going to.
Protease inhibitors, they do seem to be having some effect in longevity of people infected. How effective are they?
Well, see, the thing is, it doesn't matter if you are sick with AIDS and you are eventually going to die and you are on all sorts of medicines with all sorts of side effects. That's not really a life. What people need to do is to get well. Now, I'm going to drop a bombshell right here.
Sure.
All right?
I like bombshells.
I know of 300 people who have gotten well from AIDS. I didn't know about this when I was interviewed by you years ago. I didn't know there was any cure for AIDS. We are told publicly that AIDS is incurable. We are also told publicly that really cancer is incurable, that you can go into remission, but you cannot be cured.
Mm-hmm.
That is not true. You can be cured of cancer, as I have been cured of cancer, because you can reverse the factors that allowed the cancer to develop in the first place, and you can rebuild the immune system. Now, AIDS is just a form of cancer. AIDS is acquired immune deficiency syndrome. It's an acquired condition where your immune system is deficient. Well, cancer is virtually the same thing. In fact, virtually all disease is a result of the immune system not working properly.
Well,
every doctor will admit that.
Cancer is the out-of-control growth of cellular material, right? In other words, a tumor that just, for some reason, everything goes berserk. I mean, in a lot of ways, if you could control cancer, you might live forever.
Actually, it's not really that berserk. Cancer cells aren't totally out of control. We like to think that. In fact, that's what we teach in medicine. But when you really get down to it, they're not totally out of control. In fact, the body does a wonderful job of isolating those cancer cells. And that's one reason you form a tumor, is because the body is putting this all in one area. And when the cancer goes into your lymph nodes, we surgeons are prone to take out the lymph nodes.
Right.
But this is crazy because if you had an infection in your foot and the lymph nodes in your groin were swollen,
yes,
you would never go to a surgeon and ask him to remove the lymph nodes in your groin.
Not for an infection, right.
They're doing their job. They are keeping the infection from spreading.
Right.
Well, when you get cancer in your lymph nodes, the lymph nodes are doing the same thing. They are keeping the cancer from spreading. So what we doctors do is we take out your lymph nodes, which is part of your immune system, which is part of the barrier that keeps the cancer from spreading all over the place.
Okay.
Then we give you chemotherapy and radiation, destroy
right.
your immune system, and so then the cancer can spread everywhere.
You said 300 people have been cured of AIDS. How?
By virtually the same type of plan that I got well from cancer. And again, I would not believe this for a long time until I got some of those patients' medical records in my hands and saw where the tests were done, how bad they were. And for those of you who are medical that are listening, some of these patients even had opportunistic infections such as histoplasmosis encephalitis, where they were in the intensive care unit with, this is a fungal infection of the brain, which really only occurs with AIDS and other very suppressed immune syndromes. And these patients are now well, totally well, and HIV negative.
God, I have never heard anything like this.
Right.
In other words, once HIV positive, always HIV positive, and eventually you're going to get AIDS, inevitably. That's what I'd always heard.
Well, that's what I had always heard, and that's what I used to think, and that's what I used to say. But now I know differently. I used to also think that if you had cancer, that there really was no cure. There was only a possibility of remission. But I know better now.
Well, even in the bad old days, surgeons were occasionally able to remove a cancerous growth and get it all. I mean, they occasionally got lucky, didn't they, and removed essentially all the cancer without having a recurrence in 5 years or more?
Well, there are people who have had their cancers removed and, you know, for any, maybe even 20 years, they have not returned. Most of those people, not all, but many of those people have had chemotherapy and radiation. Now, I know of people who have had their tumors return, you know, 8, 9, 10 years after
sure.
that.
Sure.
Because you don't ever really get all the cancer cells, because the tumor always comes back.
Yep.
The same blood that's going through the tumor goes through the rest of your body, and you can never get all the tumor cells. If you have enough immune system left after you've had the treatment to destroy those cells that come back, then you may survive. But unless you change the way you're eating and living, you will either get that cancer again, another cancer, or another disease.
All right, doctor, hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour, and we're going to delve into this because, as you know, I've got somebody in my family, my dad, and I'll sort of give you an update on that. And we'll see what Dr. Day thinks. Probably not much, but we'll find out. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Stick with us. It's going to be a fascinating night. I can wail on the sax, can't he? Good morning, everybody.
To talk with Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye from outside the U.S., first, dial your access number to the USA. Then, 800-893-0. 800-387-0903. If you're a first-time caller, call Art at 702-727-1222. From east of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, call Art at 1-800-618-8255. Or call Art on the wildcard line at area code 702-727-1295. This is Coast to Coast AM from the Kingdom of Nye.
That's exactly what it is, and I'm Art Bell. Dr. Lorraine Day is here, and we'll get back to her in just a moment. Well, all right, once again, Dr. Lorraine Day. Doctor?
Yes.
I want to tell you a quick story about my father. Mm-hmm. My father came up a couple of years ago with melanoma on his scalp, and they removed it, and it took quite a while to heal. He had to go into a hyperbolic chamber to get it to heal. It was tough to heal. And he got it all healed up, and everything was well for a while. Then, a couple of months ago, he felt something in his neck, and as the doctor told him, one little lousy cell somehow got through, and he ended up with a melanoma tumor in his neck. He's in his 80s, early 80s, and so he thought that that was it, that was the end. He considered what to do and considered that he might not get an operation, not proceed with any kind of treatment at all. However, he did proceed to have the melanoma tumor removed from his neck and is entering the Sloan Kettering immunization program on top of that. In other words, to try and they have this new treatment which removes some of your own cancer cells and in some way treats them. I'm not really on top of it, and then injects them back into your tumor, I guess, and the tumor goes to work on itself. That's what he's doing, and I when I said I didn't think you'd think much of it, I imagine I'm telling the truth. What do you know about this?
Well, yes, I do know about that, and in fact, a type of that treatment has been around for quite some time. It's interesting that most of these things, like you were talking about this treatment that was just on the news about decreasing the blood supply to tumors.
Yes.
All of these came out of alternative medicine. That one came out of shark cartilage. The one that you're talking about now that they're going to be trying on your father is very similar to an alternative vaccine that was started by Dr. Virginia Livingston Wheeler, who was practically run out of town by organized medicine, even though she
really
was an MD. So these things have been around for some time. But let's just think about the cause of cancer. All you have to do is look in your newspaper and look in magazines, and I've got a number of articles right here in front of me from the Washington Post. More evidence, fruit and veggies fight cancer. Wall Street Journal, animal fat in the diet seems to promote the growth of tumors, according to Harvard researchers published in the Journal of National Cancer Institute. A link between diet and birth defects grows stronger, according to the New England Journal of Medicine. Study points to another tentative link between red meat and prostate cancer, again, Wall Street Journal. All of these things show that it is our diet and lifestyle that causes the cancer. And in fact, the Harvard School of Public Health has said 65% of all cancer could be prevented by a change in diet and lifestyle. So if 65, I say it's 99%, but if they admit that 65% of cancer could be prevented by a change in diet and lifestyle, then we have to admit that the cause of at least 65% of cancer is the wrong diet and lifestyle. So then what we've got to do, rather than give medicines or vaccines or things like that, is we've got to change the factors that cause the problem in the first place. For example, when an American gets a headache or when anybody gets a headache, they usually take an aspirin. But headaches are not caused by a deficiency of aspirin, right?
Well, that's right.
All right. So headaches are caused by too much tension, too much stress, not drinking enough water, eating the wrong foods, maybe caffeine withdrawal, many different causes, but they're certainly not caused by a deficiency of aspirin. Cancer is not caused by a deficiency of chemotherapy, nor is it caused
right.
by a deficiency of radiation.
Right.
And in fact, I had breast cancer. I didn't have cancer of the breast because I had too many breasts. Cutting them off does not solve the problem, you see?
Mm-hmm.
So what we've got to do is reverse the factors that allowed the cancer to develop in the first place.
So that even after the cancer has developed, and of course we have a picture of your cancer on our website,
right,
which is just beyond all belief. I mean, I've never in my life seen a tumor of that size and magnitude on anybody ever. I'm sure as a doctor you probably have, but my God almighty, that thing was... how big was it?
It was the size of a grapefruit. Actually, most doctors have not seen a tumor that size either. When I show those pictures to my doctor colleague friends, they gasp as well, because most people have them either burned off with radiation or poisoned out with chemotherapy before they get that size, and then the patient usually dies from the result of the chemotherapy and radiation.
So when your tumor was growing, you obviously looked at those options and said no.
Right. I did say no because I knew that they would destroy my immune system, and that was my only hope for getting well. And
You must have had some moments, doctor, when even you, as it grew to that size, when even you were wondering whether you'd made the right choice.
Well, I was so close to death that at one time I was not expected to live through the night, but I still refused to have conventional therapy because I knew that if I was that close to death, conventional therapy would finish me off in about a day. So I chose to hang in there and stay with the natural medicine. And, of course, I am totally well. And even though I had a portion of that large tumor, what we call debulked, I had some of it removed because it was getting ready to burst onto my chest. I still had cancer all through my chest wall, in the nose under my arm, and above my clavicle. And slowly, over a period of 8 months, the cancer all reversed itself. And in an additional 10 months, I was totally well. So it took me 18 months from the time I was so terribly sick and not expected to live until I was totally well.
Well, would most doctors practice what they preach? In other words, if they ended up with cancer of the sort that you had, do you think that most mainstream physicians, knowing what they know, would refuse the traditional treatments as well? That's a kind of a touchy question, I know.
No, I would say that most of them would go with traditional therapy because they don't know anything else, and I didn't know anything else for a long time. In fact, I will have to say publicly, and I try to do this frequently, is thank the good listeners out there in radio land who actually started sending me information that put me on my search to find out that this was the way to get well. I found this out before I ever developed cancer because they clued me in, and if I had never found out all the skullduggery that was going on in the AIDS epidemic, I could never have believed that there was such a big cover-up in cancer cures.
Read me the list. If you've got cancer and you want to get rid of it, you mentioned vegetables, but there's got to be a lot more to it than that. What change in lifestyle, change in diet, from what to what?
Well, just let me give you an idea of the average American now eats in his lifetime 15 cows, 24 hogs, 12 sheep, 900 chickens, and 1,000 pounds of assorted other animals that walk, swim, and fly.
Okay.
All right?
Right.
That's a lot of animal flesh going through a human body.
Yes, it is.
In 1900, the average American ate about 300 pounds of grains a year and 200 pounds of potatoes. By 1985, the consumption of grains fell by 50%. The consumption of potatoes fell by 50%. Our intake of milk increased by 50%, and our consumption of chicken went up 300% and beef 50%. During that same period of time, so we have exchanged a plant-based diet for a flesh food-based diet. In that same period of time, the incidence of cancer and heart disease and all other degenerative diseases has skyrocketed.
I know.
Right?
I know.
So what you've got to do is reverse that. I started on a totally vegan diet, meaning no animal products whatsoever. Right? Fruits, grains, vegetables, and I started drinking. I ate 3 meals a day. I started drinking a lot of fresh carrot juice and fresh green leafy vegetable juice because it's filled with lots of natural antioxidants, which you need to clean up the cancer cells in your body and reverse the problems as well as clean out the toxins. I also started drinking a lot of water. The body is 75% water. The brain is 85% water. One thing we do is dehydrate our bodies. I was a big coffee drinker. Coffee is a diuretic. It takes more water out of your body than comes in with the drink. So I started drinking a lot of water, a lot of fresh vegetable juice. In fact, I drank the juice of 13 fresh vegetable juices a day. And I'll tell you, I drank the juice of the following every week. I drank the juice of 35 pounds of carrots, 84 apples, 21 heads of romaine lettuce, 5 heads of red cabbage, 5 bunches of red chard, 7 green peppers, and 5 bunches of endive.
Oh, my God.
But what you see is cancer is a deficiency disease. We are all suffering from malnutrition because we're eating a lot of calories, but we're not eating enough vitamins, minerals, and enzymes. Our body can only make cells out of the raw materials we put in our mouth.
Right.
If we put bad things in our mouth, we'll make bad cells that get sick. If we put good things in our mouth, we will build good cells. So I started nourishing my body and putting a lot of water and a lot of nutrition into my body. And when you do it in juice form, now I ate 3 meals a day, but I drank juices in between. When you do it in juice form, your body doesn't have to spend a lot of energy digesting that. It goes right into
right.
your stomach and into your right. bloodstream.
Right. Wait. You said you ate 3 meals a day along with this.
Right.
What kind of meals?
Like for breakfast, I would have oatmeal and some fruit. For lunch, I would have, say, a baked potato with flaxseed oil, which has good omega-3 and 6 oils in it. Omega-3 and 6 oils in it. And I would have lemon juice on it. It tastes just like butter. And then I would have maybe some steamed vegetables, broccoli and cauliflower. And then I'd have a nice big salad with a lot of raw vegetables and sprouts, bean sprouts, and that I would sprout in my own kitchen, alfalfa sprouts, and even you can sprout your grains. And then for dinner in the evening, I might have fruit again or a light dinner with another fresh salad or something like that. And so you eat very well, really. You can have yams or organic brown rice and things like that. So it's not like you're on a starvation diet. You have plenty of food. But then I would get out in the sunlight every day because sunlight reduces the size of internal cancerous tumors.
It does?
Yes, it does. It is well documented in medical literature. Most doctors are not taught this. I wasn't. I had to find it on my own.
Now, wait a minute. My dad blames his melanoma on all the early days of the time he spent in the sun.
Just think about this. For thousands of years, human beings have been living outside. They've been working outside. And skin cancer is a disease, and melanoma is really a disease that's been occurring in the last 50 to 60 years. Was virtually unheard of before that time. They did a study at Baylor University where they took two groups of experimental animals. They gave one group the standard American diet. The other group was given a highly nutritious diet. Then they exposed both of them to the ultraviolet rays of the sun. In the group on the standard American diet, 25% got skin cancer. In the group that was fed a highly nutritious diet, not one animal got skin cancer.
Really?
So it is the diet that we're eating that is eliminating our barriers to the damaging rays of the sun, so we then are not allowed to get the healing rays of the sun.
Well, I too believe that the sun certainly helps in some, definitely in some ways. I mean, even with regard to fungal growth, incidental fungal growth, that kind of thing, you know, you've got it, you can literally turn into sort of a fungus if you don't get in the sun. I know, because that's me. So,
well, you can't grow a garden without sunlight.
That's absolutely.
You can't
true.
Have a healthy person without sunlight.
Hmm.
So sunlight does all sorts of things. It boosts your immune system. It lowers your blood pressure. It actually calms your nervous system because it decreases a chemical called cyclic AMP in your cells, which is increased with stress and coffee drinking and things like that. That's why you fall asleep in the sun. Sun does all sorts of wonderful things for you. Now, I'm not saying go out there and get burned, but you do need sunlight. They also did an experiment where they took two groups of experimental animals that already had cancerous tumors, and they had one group breathe indoor air and another group breathe outdoor air. The group breathing indoor air, their tumors grew twice as fast as the group breathing outdoor air. So we need outside air. I started getting out in the sun and the fresh air every day. Even when I was too sick to walk, my husband had to practically carry me out there and put me in the sun, again, not at the hottest time of day, and I would get fresh air. And when I was strong enough to walk, I started walking so I could get exercise, because cancer cannot thrive in a high oxygen environment. And the way you get oxygen around to your body is to get your blood circulating and get it well oxygenated, with particularly with outside air. So proper nutrition, lots of water, fresh vegetable juice, sunlight, fresh air, sleep. Sleep at the proper time of night. The healing hormones are produced in the body between 10 p.m. and 2 o'clock in the morning. And so people who have cancer or other serious diseases need to be in bed early. And the only time the body can really heal itself is when you're sleeping. And cancer patients need a lot of rest, a lot of sleep. So I started getting plenty of sleep. I got the stress out of my life. And in fact, this was a very important thing. I could not get well, even though I was doing all the other things, until I learned to get the stress out of my life. Now, I started out with meditation and visualization, but I had some pretty horrible experiences. And then I learned also that when you are practicing meditation, your brain is in alpha waves, and those are the hypnotic escapism waves where you're not really solving the problem. And I turned to Bible study and prayer, even though I'd been an agnostic for 30 years of my adult life, because you are in beta waves, which are the alert waves, which are the problem-solving waves. And I gave my stress and all of my problems, which everybody has, to God, and I was able to have some peace and calmness, and then I started to get well.
All right, Doctor, hold on. We'll get right back to you after the top of the hour. My guest is Dr. Lorraine Day, and if you doubt what she's saying, go to the website, go down to her name, and look at the photographs and gasp. I'm Art Bell. We'll be right back. Ooh,